You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 11 October. We've got UK GDP expected later this morning, 1.4% year-on-year versus 1.2% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Alex Dace from Thumbo Wealth. Strong production update from Theresa. And I suppose if you're a platinum miner, manage what you can, which is production and cost. And of course, chrome is now the big story. Bianca Bortis from Citadel Global on the Rand, one of the best EM currencies so far in 2024 against the dollar. But what are the risks and thoughts from me on why I prefer renting to owning a home? This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, a website of imaginary cars. Non-existent dealership offers cars at bargain prices, leaving victims of the fraud in tears. Business Day, UK court ruling a hammer blow for Sibanye-Stillwater, miner liable for damages of up to $21 billion in dispute with Appian over stakes in two Brazilian mines. This goes back to 2021. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ off a tenth of a percent. The East is green. Sydney up 0.01%. Tokyo up 0.6%. Hong Kong is closed for Chongqing Festival. And apologies for to Hong Kongans for mangling that. And Tencent is 1.1% higher. Commodities green. Gold 2,658. Brent 79.17. Platinum 985. Palladium 1,087. Rand 17.49. Bitcoin 60,550. Top 40 opening call, 150 points higher or 0.2% green open.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Thumbo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. Theresa, who mostly mine in South Africa, although they've got a mine in Zimbabwe, that's not yet in production. They had their fourth quarter production update. A good set of numbers in my sense. And as I said in the intro, managing what they can, which is, you know, getting a little bit more platinum out the ground, chrome doing very well for them. Of course, pricing in what they get for their PGM, not so great, but not much they can do about that.
Yes, good morning, Simon. Theresa did deliver, we would say, a good operational result, as it alluded to record annual production. There's also a marginal uptick in the PGM output. Chrome output was up 8%, while the grade also improvement in grade as well as recovery. And that was also obviously benefited by higher chrome prices. So I think from a financial results that we can come, that's going to get a result there from chrome. In PGM, the production was pretty much the same, but there was a drop in the grade, and there was also and a drop in the price of about 28%.
Yeah.
So PGMs, you know, as we know, market is quite tough there, but, you know, Theresa's still in a good position. They are in a net cash position. I mean, they're still guided for production to be within expectations. And they are proceeding with the project in Zimbabwe, which is called the Karoo Project. They still need to raise funding for it. That's something that's going to drive efficiency over time. The market for chrome has been quite strong from China. So it does seem like the business is relatively well positioned. And the value of the business, I would say, is probably, you know, at least attractive. Or, you know, but we would say we're optimistic about the Theresa's prospects.
Optimistic about Theresa, and certainly, I mean, their chrome is doing great. They're getting great prices for the chrome, make no mistake about that. But is the PGM space something that interests you, or are you still taking a sort of a wait and see as we wait for the actual metal prices, platinum and palladium, to start moving higher?
Yes, that is a very difficult one. So with PGMs, it's difficult to say we want to be too negative, because then it's usually an indication that you're probably at the bottom of the cycle. But I think if you look at what happened to PGMs over the last few years, it had a very, you know, bullish prices in rhodium. Now, I think that's going to continue to probably meander for a time period. And then if we had for about 7 years, palladium above platinum.
Yeah.
That was also unusual. So I think going forward, probably platinum will be a component of the PGM basket, but who knows? It all depends on demand for, you know, for internal combustion engines going forward. But also, I think the drop in supply will probably be in their favor because we aren't really seeing massive new supply coming to the market, and that offsets some of the demand issues.
And the other thing, and you mentioned chrome. I mean, back in the day, I don't think we really, I mean, we knew about chrome and PGMs. Chrome has become, I suppose, important for them at this point in time as the PGM prices are under pressure. Chrome is certainly doing well and kind of, I suppose, helping and alleviate some of that pain. They are PGM miners, but chrome as a byproduct is a great byproduct for now.
So chrome is predominantly used for stainless steel. China doesn't have any resources, so that's why the demand is so important for South Africa. I think 80% of China's demand actually comes from South Africa.
Yeah.
And then, as you alluded to, it's a byproduct from UG2 mining and PGMs. So UG2 tends to be lower grade type of mining in South Africa. So when supply does drop, NTC miners dropping UG2, which means indirectly less chrome as well on the market, and that'll be probably supportive for price.
Yeah, absolutely. And stainless steel, of course, is in many senses the ultimate green metal in that it is almost infinitely recyclable. We'll leave that there. That's Alex Dace, Portfolio Manager in Thumbua Wealth, talking about that Theresa production update for, I think it was fourth quarter end September. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Bortis, director at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the early morning. The rand, it's weakened a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but it certainly has been strengthening. It's one of the best emerging market currencies against the US dollar so far this year. Risks remain a number of them. Is the Middle Eastern conflict perhaps the primary risk in many senses?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, the rand's been performing really, really well. And when we look at its performance, it's gained about 7.9% over the past year. And it is in the top five performing emerging market currencies for the year. When we look at some of the risk factors, the Middle East is definitely something that we are keeping an eye on, but it's definitely not the main driver of the weakness we've seen over the past 2 weeks. That weakness that we've seen coming through into the rand following that significant rally is actually attributed to the fact that markets are now positioning for a slower pace of rate cuts by the Fed.
I take your point on that. And if Fed's going to be slower, then we see a little more sort of strength in the dollar and money moving into there. We've also got US elections, they're less than a month away. By all accounts, it is a toss-up as to who wins. Is it Harris? Is it Trump? A Trump win, however, could see increased sort of global trade tensions. I mean, tariffs and his rhetoric, which could see more dollar strength and potential rand weakness. Is that a fair concern?
That is definitely a fair concern. And I would like to draw you back to 2016 when he actually came into power. It was a very volatile environment. It left room for a lot of political uncertainty. It exacerbated geopolitical fragmentation, and it also puts a lot of strain on trade tensions, specifically with China. And there is a concern there that his volatile way of leading the country will filter through into the rest of the market and actually cause quite a few ripple effects throughout. What is interesting is that we are almost just a month away from elections in the US, and the market isn't seemingly paying too much attention to the election at the moment. It's inflation and interest rates, as it's been for the rest of the year, and we haven't really seen a lot of action in terms of the Kamala Harris-Donald Trump race towards the Oval Office.
That's actually a great point. The market seems almost uninterested in who's going to be leading the world's largest economy after November. We've had the Chinese stimulus package, $142 billion, which is a giant number any way you spend it. This could really be a big deal, although perhaps further down the line. And I'm thinking if China really starts booming again, demand for commodities, that would actually be good for our currency. But that's not going to happen in a hurry.
Definitely not going to happen in a hurry. This with some additional fiscal measures, but they really fell short in pressing the market, significant rally in specifically commodity-driven currencies like the rand and the Australian dollar on the back of that $142 billion package. But it quickly ran out of steam as the US inflation rate narrative kind of dominated the market again. What the market is really looking for from China is not only a matter of pumping money into the economy, but really winning back consumer sentiment and investor sentiment on a global scale. They need to win back the trust of foreign investors. And until they reach a point where they can actually sustainably do that, I don't see the economy in China turning at a rapid pace.
Okay, but bringing it back local, of course, the risks are the government of national unity. We've got a midterm a budget policy statement later this month. Those really are our own sort of internal risks. And certainly the budget is always a balancing act. A coalition government, equally a balancing act. And either of those could have negative impacts on our currency if they sort of start going wrong.
I think what the market will really look for is fiscal prudence. The finance minister has been really intent on promulgating fiscal prudence and saying South Africa is heading down a road of making sure that we are reining in our budget deficits and that we are taking a conservative stance in terms of our government spending. I think what the market will really be looking at is a continuation of that rhetoric, but also looking for hints at potential positive change in policy in terms of what could drive sentiment and economic growth going forward in South Africa.
If we look at the current rand, it's about 17.50. Obviously, it's moving moment by moment. What's your fair value at Citadel Global for the rand against the dollar?
I would say fair value is anywhere between 17.50 and 17.80 at the moment. That remains a moving target, obviously, as dynamic shift in the market. So at these levels, I think we are pretty steady. When we got down to levels closer to the 17 mark, the rand was completely overbought. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't see additional strength.
Yeah.
Just because fair value is pegged at a certain level doesn't imply that we have to trade at that level. We've seen the rand deviate from fair valuations over and over and over again. And it will, at the end of the day, be driven by sentiment, specifically global sentiment. And if we see this continuation of interest rate cuts and we see the dollar coming under pressure, the rand is actually really well positioned for additional strength.
Yeah, I take your point. There's a fair value and then there's the currency which will move. But US inflation, US rates seems to be the biggie. We'll keep a close eye on those. Bianca Bortus, Director, Citadel Global. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you think rand is stronger or weaker from here over the next couple of months? Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So thoughts from me. I put a tweet out earlier in the week, a bit of backstory, moved out of the apartment we owned about a year ago and have now sold it. We are renting. It's the first time since 1998 that I am a non-property owner. I own REITs, but I mean individual property and the like. And thoughts from me on why I prefer renting to owning my home. I think it's a horrible investment. I think it's wildly expensive. I think it is wildly restrictive. You may disagree, and that's totally fine. I mean, if you want to buy your home, that's completely, absolutely. But here's my logic. And first and foremost is costs. Here's the scariest stat that you can find out there. A 1 million rand bond, if you pay it over 20 years, you're going to pay 2.5 million rand in total. In other words, 1 million rand for the property, 1.5 million on interest rates. Your property goes up 150% and you're at break even. Well, you're not, because there are more costs coming. We'll get to those in a second. But let's pause here a moment. So you bought a 1 million rand house and you paid 2.5 million. You see who's really making money here? The banks. And here's the twisted part of it. Is a home loan is like the safest loan out there. Why? Because they have an immovable asset. I can't take my house and stick it somewhere else or hide it from the bank or anything. Yes, I can damage it. Yes, I can absolutely cause value loss on the property. But it's a low-risk loan. And the real winners here in property market are the banks, those doing the home loan. But that's a whole different story. You'll also remember we've chatted with Dr. Roelof Botha a number of times, and his numbers suggest the average bondholder paid 50,000 more last year than they did in 2022 because of those rate increases. 50,000 in a year. I don't know, 50,000 just lying around to pay for nothing. I mean, you still only had your home. So yes, rates will move. They'll go up, they'll go down. When they go down, we all feel a little bit richer and our bond improves, but it's that up that really, really hurts. I don't know how households found that extra 50,000. But there are more costs. When buying, transfer fees, taxes, a 2.5 million rand tax will cost you 80,000 in transfer tax. Now, if it's, I think, 1.1 million or below, there is no transfer tax, but you've just bought a 2.5 million rand house and 80,000 transfer tax. But here's an even wilder number. You buy a 10 million rand house. Now, I don't know many who are buying a 10 million rand house. Transfer tax, 900,000. That's a lot of money to the government. And the problem with the tax is quite simple. Your house that you paid, and let's keep with the 10 million number because the math is easier. You paid a 10 million rand house you bought, and you paid 900,000 tax and another 100,000 to a lawyer to transfer it. So you've paid effectively 11 million, but your house is worth 10. Because the extra million you paid on taxes and the like, that doesn't increase the value of the house. So the first 10% of increase, well, that's just to get you to break even. You also need to factor in maintenance of a property. Experts will say that should be around 2% per year, the value of the property. Maybe you're a DIY fan. Maybe you can get that number down. Maybe it's a new build, and that could also mean a lower number potentially. But there still is that cost of the maintenance on, you know, the roof leaking or the pool or whatever the case may be. Even just painting, interior, exterior, all of those bits and pieces. And then one day you want to sell your property. Now you're going to pay an agent 5% plus VAT. So that million rand house that goes up 150% in 20 years and you lose money because of taxes, because of maintenance, because of agent fees, because of interest paid to the bank. There are a lot of winners here, but so far the winners are not the buyers of the house. It needs to become a 3 million rand house, in other words, up three times, and you are at break even. You're not making money yet. But there's other realities, is that we tend to sell our house every 7 years after buying. That's the average in South Africa. So we never really own. After 7 years, you've hardly paid any principal. It's just interest. Now, here's a trick. You can pay your home off in 7 years. Easy enough. Pay 10% above what the bank wants you to pay. Never decrease as rates drop. Increase every year by your salary increase. Salary goes up 5%, increase that bond repayment by 5%. And pay on the date that you get your salary, not the first of the month, which is typically when the bank wants the money. You do that, you pay your bond off in 7 years. Now you're rolling. There are issues with renting. Sure. How's your landlord? I mean, do they fix things? Mine is great. I rent from a developer. I got a problem. I drop a message. Within an hour or two, there's a maintenance guy at the door, and he's there to fix it. Your mileage may vary. If you've got a horrid landlord, it's going to be a horror. They can also kick you out. You know, your lease is 1 year. At the end of the year, they can say it's been real. Or they could jack your rent. You can't paint the walls or drill holes. Well, you can. And I have. But at cost to repair, replace when you leave. Renting also gives you some flexibility. I can move. You buy, you now live there. What if the neighborhood goes south? There are neighborhoods in Joburg which just, you know, 20, 30 years ago were the greatest and are now, well, the worst. What if you get a job on the other side of town or in a different town? You get divorced or married or have kids or the kids change school or the kids leave home. You buy, you are, in theory, you're sitting there for, well, I don't know, ideally 20 years. People also say, ah, but they'll get a bargain. The best deal in the neighborhood. How so? We're not property experts. It's hard enough picking the right stock to buy, and we spend hours every week focusing on markets and stocks. Truthfully, I spend hours every day. Stocks also offer great liquidity, but it's hard getting the stocks right. Why? How are we suddenly getting property right? What is our expertise in property? Likely zero. I've owned two properties since I moved to Joburg in 2007. My return after costs? About zero. Zero. Man, I could have put the money in the bank and I would have done better. Did I buy bad? Maybe. Joburg just a bad place to buy a property? Maybe. Everyone in the Western Cape Atlantic seaboard is definitely telling me that. Everyone also says I'm paying somebody else's bond if I'm renting. Yes, I am. But my current bond is, my current rent rather, is about half of what my bond would be. And so with some discipline, I save that difference and that puts me massively further ahead. And maybe that's the point. Financial Ghost mentioned it on Twitter when I tweeted it. He said maybe discipline is that key point. You might also like the security of owning your home, albeit the bank owns it, but yep, some security. You might want a house you can leave to your kids. Sure, I have no kids. But back to where I started. I much prefer to rent. And maybe you prefer to own. That's absolutely fine. But run the numbers and make sure you fully understand the decision and are happy with it. Don't just jump into that trap that says property is a great investment, a great wealth creator, and everyone must own their own home. It's not always the case. That's it for today. I was chatting with Petri Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors yesterday about Sasol. He's trading the range to try and reduce his average entry price. We asked if you are holding Sasol. Half said no Sasol for you, and that's certainly the boat I sit in. Quarter said holding, giving great value. Rest are split between trading the ranges and bits of both. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again Monday. Difference between wealth preservation and creation.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.